Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Morelia Python Radio, brought to you by MoreliaPythons.com. Looks like there's getting a boost in traffic over there, Owen, and, you know, let's get that back to where it used to be.
I'm glad that everybody's going back. I mean, that's awesome that it's happening that way.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I know that, we've said this a couple times, that Sean's working on putting the old skin back on it, then, you know, it should be cool. So go over there, check it out. It's a cool forum, cool stuff, and that's that. Tonight we have, all the way from Australia, or I should say today for him, or tomorrow for him, we have Nathan Troy from Spellbinding Serpents joining us, and we'll get to him in a couple minutes. Should be cool. You know, I always love, I get fired up with the carpet python talk when we're talking to from guys from Australia. I just, it's so cool because they're just right there in their backyard, and, you know, I don't know. I get pumped up. Are you pumped up, Owen? What's going on?
I am so pumped up, I can barely contain myself.
I see that. That's good to go. So we got, what, 4 hours left?
Three hours left
to get your Morelia Python radio.
You lazy bastards, all of you. Because in the past 10 minutes, there have been like 5 shirt sales, all of you. You wait till the last minute.
Are we up to 500?
Taking years off my life, you people. What?
Are we up to 500?
We are up to, we have sold, right now, we have sold 61 shirts, and we have raised up to $574 for US ARC.
Nice. That's awesome. That's good.
That is through the shirt purchases, and then we have a total of $121 that have been donated on top of shirt purchases. So people have bought the shirt and then donated money up on top of that. So it is mass insanity. I love it. Doing well. About a week ago, I'm like, if we can get to 500, I'd be happy. But now we're so close, I'm like, if we can get to 600, I'll be happy. So we have 3 more hours. If you can hear my voice right now and you haven't purchased a shirt, go do it now. I don't want – God help you if you email me next week.
You know,
God help you.
Let's see if we can get to 700 by the end of the show. You know, that would be cool.
It's a tall order.
Come on, man.
Tall order.
We can do it. We got the Morelia family out there. I think we can do it. So, but you know, it's more important now than ever to support US ARC because there's a couple bills that are there.
Yeah,
one of them kind of hits pretty close to home. a Louisiana Senate Bill 357 that seeks to ban boa constrictors and venomous snakes. But when you go and you look at the bill, carpet pythons, diamond pythons, scrub pythons, I forget what else was put in there, but pretty much I think it's anything over 8 feet in length.
Yeah, so they're just grabbing everything.
Yeah. So, you know, I posted up a link on our Facebook group page, Morelia Python Radio group page. So go over there, and that'll send you to the link, or you can just go straight to usarc.org and make sure you send out your emails, contact your representatives, and let them know that, you know, this is bullshit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on.
Just... I think right now they're asking just for people who live in Louisiana. So,
right.
But it is definitely one of those things that hits kind of home. I mean, if you have friends who live in Louisiana, call them. Ask them if you can use their address or something else along those lines. Just, you know, do what you can to kind of try to get this thing taken care of. Because it's scary to think that, you know, the talk have always been like, well, it's not the retics and they're this, they're not us. But, you know, now this is one that names carpet python. So how, you know, should we have been working on this the whole time?
Yeah.
Probably, but maybe now it'll wake up a few more people.
I think the problem is that, and maybe it hasn't been as bad as it's been in the past, but I see it's only reaction, not prevention. You know what I mean?
Course.
It's like something comes up, we react to it, but we're not doing it in the downtime. And I think we've got to get better at that. And I think we got to get better as being a unit, you know. It should be reptile keepers. You know, it's just silly that we don't all band together and knock this shit out, because it's just ridiculous. Because it's also House Bill 4393, and that's pretty much doing the same thing. And I believe that one is in West Virginia. There's one... House Bill 3985 seeks to ban many species of herps, including boas, reticulated pythons, any species listed on and as threatened or endangered under the Endangered Species Act. And actually, that includes chinchillas, prairie dogs, certain parrots, parakeets, macaws, some iguana species, even small fish.
Crap, what am I going to do with my herd of groundhog or herd of prairie dogs? Shit.
Son of a bitch. So,
damn it.
Like I said, go over to usarc.org and, you know, you can check out all the bills that are there and make sure you do your part, man. It's important. And if you can donate, whatever, donate. But here we got this little offer. Like I said, it's 3 hours we got left. You
get
a little
cool-ass t-shirt. Yeah.
So.
Cool-ass t-shirt and you donate to USARC. And you get to feel good about yourself and sport around, obviously, your favorite podcast radio show about reptiles that's out there. Obviously.
Right.
Come on now.
What else would be
No, what case? Else is there? There's nothing now. Please. No.
So, yeah, we got to get the ball rolling with Carpet Fest.
Yeah.
Hey, it's right around the corner, May 17th.
Yeah.
Waldorf, Maryland, Reading Reptile Breeders is hosting the... I guess this would be the third annual Carpet Fest. For more info, I'm working on carpetfest.org, and that's pretty much going to be a website for both the Northeast and the Northwest. So if you want to donate an animal or you want any information, you can contact us at info@moreliapythonradio.com for the Northeast. And the one in the Northwest, you can contact Heather Archambault from Mystic Exotics, and that's that one is on July 26th, and her email is mysticexotics@gmail.com for more information there. So real quick before we get Nathan on, how's your season going? What's new?
We got the one clutch of super caramel jags eggs that hit the ground. And it's 22 eggs out of Venus, and they are doing fantastic. And then I got 15 eggs yesterday from probably one of the most fantastic pairings that I have going on this year. and that is a their head albino, Miami corn snakes. Now, I've been working for months to get these corn snakes, and thank God it finally worked. Several times we had to adjust the bedding and temperature gauges and food cycles. We also went by the moon, and we got them to go. Cheers all around.
Yeah, so. You're such an ass.
I love it because someone asked me earlier this season, like, what's my plan for the corn snakes? I'm like, I don't know, put them together. I kind of ignore them, and they still work out, which is where the beauty of corn snakes is. So,
yeah. Cool.
But yeah, that's what we're. Everything else is just kind of up in the air. We'll see.
Cool. Yeah, poison ivy, my melanistic IJ, is probably hours away from laying. She looks uncomfortable as hell. We're about 4 weeks from her shed, so our pre-lay shed. So that's
have you
cool.
taken your eyes off of her? Or are you just like are you talking while your face is pushed up against the glass or you know enclosure?
Yeah, I'm just like oh man, I can't. You know, I peek in. I'm like, did she lay yet? Did she lay yet?
No, I'm not going. I'm not coming to work all this week. Click. Right, so yeah, it's like you know.
Yeah, and you know, it hit me the other day because my zebra head albino, I call her Tic Tac. Anyway. She is, yeah, I know, right? She is thick as a brick, and I have a good shot at getting albino zebra jags. You know, that's pretty cool, man. I don't think there's any. I don't think there's a whole lot of people that have them, so I'm pretty excited that that is a possibility. And same thing with my caramel head albino. She's in the same boat. So if I get those two clutches, I don't care about anything else, man. Everything else is just extra. But there were the three that I was, like, really pushing for. And it looks like we're there. So I'm just waiting for their pre-lay sheds. And we should be good to go. I think.
I, too, am waiting for some to prelay, but other ones I'm still seeing lock up. Like, any person who tells me that IJs breed and lay before everybody else is a dirty liar. Mine's still breeding. So,
yeah, well, see,
I don't know.
You're like, what do they call that when Superman has the flip world?
Oh, I'm kryptonite? I'm kryptonite to IJs.
No, is this what you're going? No. You know, like, I can't think of it. God damn it. They have,
Bizarro.
Like, yeah, it's like the flip. Everything is flipped.
Bizarro. I'm Bizarro IJ guy. Okay.
Yeah, everything's flipped around. So your bridles will go first, and your IJs will go last.
My bridles are not even up from hibernation yet. I was thinking next week I should actually bring them up and like, you know, show them some warmth because you know they haven't experienced that for a while. So you know. They'll enjoy that, but the funny ones that I think are that I'm waiting to go are actually the Max, and she hates me more than usual, which is rare for her. So who knows? Maybe we got lucky there. And then my Savu male is chasing the females around the cage, so who knows what we got going on there?
Right.
And then Ryan got black face white lip eggs.
Yes, I saw that. I was going to mention
like,
that.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, that's awesome. And, I mean, Chris and I were jumping around and high-fiving, and they weren't even our eggs. So, I mean, it's like, someone did it. So it's like, it's a huge plus. And, of course, immediately afterward, you know, Ryan got, like, barraged by Chris with text messages. And thank you, Ryan, for answering and, you know, not just telling us to piss off. So it was, hopefully we can get something going out of those guys. And, yeah.
Yeah, we got to get him on the show, man.
Yeah, we do. You just, like, someone on the West Coast, just go to Ryan's house and refuse to leave until he agrees to come on this show.
You know, I thought that you would have been the guy that would be able to get him on the show. You know what I mean? I mean.
Come on.
I thought that
I'm only good for several people, so.
Yeah.
Let's pressure Nick or something. Ask Nick for a favor if he can like guilt trip Ryan in or something like that.
No, he said he would come on the show, but every time our things just never lined up right. So I guess
well, damn it, line it up right. God damn it, Eric.
I'm gonna have to contact him and get this going because maybe we should
wait
until
we're good.
You know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But
I still need to know how to get the eggs. I still got to know how to get to where he's at. So we got to bring him on no matter what he's doing.
Yeah.
So we'll worry about that later.
But since Nathan is calling all the way around the world.
Yeah, let's bring him on rather than having the guy from Australia wait on the phone.
Yeah.
We're horrible people.
Yeah. Hey, Nathan. Welcome to Morelia Python Radio. Glad to have you. How you doing?
Yeah, good, good. How are you guys?
Doing all right. Remember, we told you that that whole time can fly when you're talking snake. Yeah, normally the intro doesn't last that long, but whatever. So.
Oh, I know what you mean. Any time I'm talking to someone on the phone about snakes, it pretty much gets away on you pretty easy, hey?
Excellent. Then the 2 hours should fly. So, let's get started, because, you know, you are calling us from, where did you say you were in, Queensland?
Yeah, in Mackay, Queensland, sort of central Queensland, close to North Queensland. They fight about which part we're in.
All right, that's awesome. So why don't you tell us, how did you get started into reptiles?
Probably ever since I was really young. I was always into, I know, as a kid, you're always into, like, dinosaurs and always liked, you know, dangerous animals like sharks and lions and everything like that. Sort of, I think when I was about 5 or 6, saw a venomous display at a mall that my grandfather used to do cleaning at, and, you know, had some brown snakes and death adders and stuff, and thought that was really, really cool, but I grew up in sort of western New South Wales where you grow up sort of taught everything's venomous and if you see anything, don't go near it and, you know, so I'm going to whack it over the head with a shovel. So I didn't sort of get involved with anything then. It was pretty crazy. You know, that was like I'm 34, so sort of a fair while ago when people, especially out west and, you know, on farms and things, they're not too interested in looking after the snakes. So I didn't really get involved, and I was really interested in sharks and stuff when I was that young, and I used to do a lot of sort of reading up on sharks and things. And then as I sort of got older, I was always still interested in snakes, but I never got around anyone that was sort of into them. I remember a kid at school had a diamond python in their enclosure at home, and, you know, he's sort of a bit freaked out to go near it. And then as I got older, one of my good friends that I was working with, he in the Hunter Valley in New South Wales, he was the sort of like the local snake catcher. If there was anyone that had like sort of problem reptiles and stuff, they'd give him a call and he'd go out and relocate them. And he sort of, you know, educated me a lot, I guess you could say, on that you don't have to be so scared of snakes, even so much the venomous ones. Like he'd take like he had a blue-bellied black snake and he took me up to an oval and got it out so we could take some pictures and video of it and sort of, you know, just say, you know, this snake isn't going to just come and chase you and want to have a piece of you sort of thing. It just wants to go on its own way and you've really got to sort of corner them or back them up to sort of make them defensive. But he also had a Murray Darling python of his own as a pet, and that was the first python that I got to have a bit of a play with and stuff, and I was really, really sort of excited by it.
Mm-hmm.
It was a fair few years after that I sort of he'd moved towns and I moved towns. We sort of we both moved up to Queensland, just a few hundred k's away from each other. But and met my fiance and we'd been together for a while and we were talking about getting the pets and we were thinking about getting a turtle and you know, she said that she you know, she's always liked snakes and old pythons in particular, and had friends that had pythons when she was younger. And I was like, oh yeah, I'd love to get a python. So So that was, we were living in Cairns at the time, which is like far north Queensland, and we sort of looked around to try and get a snake then. Up in Queensland, the only pythons you can buy from a pet shop are Anoresia, and I wasn't sort of too sold on the look of Anoresia and stuff, because it only sort of had anything to do with that Murray Darling, and I liked the look of their head and sort of their, you know, a lot bigger snake. And so we sort of did some research into it, and then my partner Karen got in touch with some people she used to know that had been involved in snakes, and get some numbers off people and ring someone and say, oh, you know, have you got anything for sale? And, oh, yeah, I've got some death adders. And I'm like, nah, we're sort of kind of need after a python, so we'll, you know, anyone that's got any pythons. And sort of after we got bounced around between a few people, we got in touch with a lady that was just a bit out of Cairns, and she had a clutch of coastal carpet pythons. And that was our first snake that we got. That was the coastal carpet python. I don't know if you had a look at our page, Obsidian. She was our first snake. She's sort of about 5 years old now.
Nice.
And we grew. We had her, and that was sort of our only snake for a number of years until we relocated. I relocated just for a better sort of job down to Mackay, which is about 1,000 k's south of Cairns, and while I was working here, I met a guy named Brett Modra, who he's a big breeder and keeper in Mackay, and become really good friends with Brett, and he's sort of someone that I'd sort of consider my mentor nowadays. Like he's one of my best friends, and they show me pretty much, you know, everything that I needed to know about sort of keeping them a bit better, and he was the first guy that I got sort of got hooked by his sort of passion with the reptiles. Our first snake of him was the female that we bred last season, which was a heifer albino Darwin carpet.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And yeah, she's a really, really nice snake, and that was sort of, once I went around his place, saw his snakes, saw the babies, and I'm like, man, this is so cool. And then once we I got talking to him, and as we became better friends, he's just sort of I was just hooked on his enthusiasm for them, and I was really lucky because he's such a knowledgeable guy that it sort of, apart from, as well as reading a lot of books and things like that, he sort of exposed me to a lot of knowledge and better ways to do things and stuff. And that sort of, yeah, that was, once I became friends with Brett and bought a snake off him, it was game over. I've still only got a small collection, sort of, I guess you could say, like, we've only got 15 animals that are like our permanent animals, but it's only sort of limited by, I do shift work, so I sort of work like 5 days away, 5 days home sort of thing. So we've got a teenage son and a 2-year-old daughter, and I figure if the collection gets too big too quick, then Karen sort of won't be too happy about having to look after too many snakes in the days that I'm away. But that's sort of where my teenage son, he's sort of just getting involved in it, so I'd reckon as he gets a little bit more involved and stuff, the collection's sort of going to go up just due to the fact that he can sort of help out while I'm away.
All right, cool.
But yeah.
Well, that'd be nice to get the help right there. I know I would love it. So can you give us a quick overview of what exactly you're working with right now? What are your projects, and what are you doing breeding-wise?
Yeah, well, last season was our first year breeding. We had a clutch of pure Darwins that was an 18-month-old male albino I bought off a guy down in South Australia, but it was bred by Southern Cross Reptiles, the guys who sort of introduced the albino to the hobby, and I paired that with the female that I'd gotten off Brett. She was a 100% heifer albino. Obviously, she'd originated from Southern Cross as well. So I paired those guys. also put him over a coastal that I had. I was sort of looking to see, I guess, what I could get out of him in a way. In regards to, you know, he's only sort of 18 months old. I just wanted to see whether I could get a couple of clutches out of the 1 mile. And also, being our first year, we weren't really sort of banking on that we'd have any luck at all. So I thought I had a few people that were just after pets that weren't too worried about getting, you know, a particular, you know, like a pure Darwin or a Darwin Coastal Cross or anything like that. And I already did have an adult Darwin Coastal Cross that was like a really, really sort of pretty colouring and pattern. So I thought I'll put him over those girls and see how we go. And I was sort of just, you know, fingers crossed sort of thing that I would have got two clutches and just so I could, but never had anything to do with you know, incubating or you know, getting hatchlings feeding and everything like that. So I sort of just thought, oh, you know, I've got a fair few people that are after just some cheap pets and stuff, as well as the fact that I wanted to try and breed the albino to the head albino Darwin. And so that was, ended up putting him over those two girls, and they both come good for us. So that was sort of the only project we sort of had last year. The other sort of animals that I've got at the moment is we've got our coastal female, which was the first one that we got, the pure coastal, and we've got two albino Darwins, a male and female. Het for albino Darwin. I've got a het for albino Darwin that, I don't know, possibly may have something else there, but we'll see in the next year or so. I've got a pair of Womers, a pair of Blackheads. They're really cool. My partner just received a wheat-billed Stimson Python for a birthday, and and
a hell of a birthday present.
Oh yeah, it's good when you're getting snakes for a birthday present.
Oh yeah.
And we've also got a rough scar, a female rough scar, and a male green tree. I was hoping the green tree was going to be a female, but we'll can't complain.
Yeah.
He's a real nice boy, so we'll sort of worry about him. We'll worry about getting a partner for him probably this year, I'd imagine.
Oh yeah, once you get one, you got to have it paired up. I mean, I hate lone males. I don't know what to do with them.
He's a really nice looking, he's a nice boy too, so I wouldn't mind getting him a girlfriend. But the hardest thing with the green trees, I guess, is you want to, everything that we've bought, I've preferred to buy from a hatchling, apart from the male albino that we've got. I bought him as a yearling. Everything else has always been hatchlings, and that's sort of the way I've preferred to go. But yeah, that's the decision, I guess, with a green tree is, do you take the punt and get a hatchling so you can, you know, watch it grow up and go through the colour change again, or you know, if you need a particular sex, just go with a yearling, or say there's something that's been sexed. And yeah, decision wise to make this year.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy if you go and you buy a chondro and you think it's one sex and, you know, you get it
I'm
up and you have all males or all females.
I'm just starting this crap, all right? I'm terrified of it.
Oh, no.
Yeah, well, when we got him, my mate had everything that he bred that year was here. I think he got, like, say, you know, out of somewhere around, I think it would have been somewhere around the 50 or 60 hatchlings from multiple clutches in different species, all Morelia, but everything female. I think he had one male out of everything, and so I thought, oh, well, it's a pretty good bet we've probably got a female green tree. But one of his sheds about 6 months ago, his first shed once he was a little bit older, sort of says otherwise.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's always good times. let's talk some carpets. So You know, well, I guess your next season is going to be coming up because, like, we were talking about this before we started, that you're getting ready to start feeding up your girls for breeding season coming up. And what's some of your breeding projects that you got coming up that you're excited about? Anything, you know, that you've been waiting for since you picked up these baby snakes?
Well, this year will be like our first year of like an albino to albino pairing with our Darwin. So the female that I've got, she's really, she's sort of pretty, like what you'd call a high yellow, I guess, and like a bit reduced pattern. So she's got a pretty good stripe down her dorsal, sort of only joined in a couple of spots, sort of mid-body. So my goal is with the albinos is I'd like to work on refining sort of like a really definite full stripe, high yellow. So out of the clutch that the male that'll go over her this year, mm-hmm. I sort of got a few heads that were pretty much almost full striped, and the holdback that we'll keep is basically unbroken full stripe. So that's the goal with the albinos. I'd like to, you know, sort of produce a really high yellow, fully striped one. So I'll put him with those two albinos together this year, and fingers crossed that we get, you know, a few nice stripes come out and something that's going to look in the high yellow mark, high yellow region. I'd also like to just produce like your classic coloured in a stripe as well, like a lot of white, bright orange, and as well as your sort of like your lavendery sort of fluoro colours.
Gotcha.
Which I think there'd be a good chance. I'd say that, you know, like the variation in carpets, you don't know exactly what you're going to get all the time, but you know, from the female to the male to look at them, I think, you know, they're probably going to be a good mix, and we'll wait and see how they come out, but yeah, that'll be her first year breeding, so we'll see how she goes.
Okay, so I'm curious with the stripe. Do you know how the genetics work with that? Is it polymorphic type of gene, or is it just
yeah,
a selective breed?
I think that it's more sort of just a selective bred thing. I don't know. You see, it's nothing like when you see, like, I don't know if you've seen, like, say, things like the tri-stripe coastals and stuff that are available over here, and
sure.
Or, you know, like your tiger stripes and stuff. It's more sort of, I guess, a reduced pattern that leaves a stripe in a way. I think it's more sort of a thing you work on line breeding. It's not like I don't see it as anything sort of genetic. I think it's more sort of just a line bred thing that you'd want to concentrate on. But
is that the same with the high yellow? Is that just like from a certain lineage of animals, or is that just something that you guys have been working on down in Australia for, you know, quite a while? Or how did that come about?
Oh, same again. I think that's more sort of just a thing to do with just the variation in colouring in the Darwins. I think the higher yellow shows through on some animals, just the same as, like, if you see a picture of, say, my female heifer albino, she's got a lot of dark patterns to her, whereas you see some pictures of some really nice Darwins that'll be almost, you know, the predominant colour on them is like that bright burnt orange sort of colour. And I think it's more to do just with the patterning and stuff. Like, I guess we'll find out more as we breed more. I know that there is some guys that are further down south that have sort of worked on refining different things, like, say, your high yellow, classic, striped, you know, just a few different variations of... And it's really just colour variations of the same animals, but I just think the variation in carpets with the albino gene, I just think you see a lot of different colouring coming out.
Now, would your male albino Darwin that you have, would that be considered a high yellow, the one that's on your Facebook page?
No, I'd probably class him as like a classic. I'd sort of consider the female a high yellow. I don't know that I've got any really good pictures of her in like a sort of a natural light, but she's got, she has very little of like the actual white scalation.
Gotcha.
She's, the male is like what I sort of class as a classic, whereas he's, you know, his orange is really bright orange. His white is really crisp white, you know, what you'd expect, and he has,
sure,
he still has some of the sort of the yellowy lavender sort of colours through him.
Right.
But what, when you put him side by side with the female has very little of the actual white scaling, and she's got a lot of just like a yellow hue to her. All of it, majority of her like colouring, where it's not the bright orange, is more of a yellowish sort of colour.
Gotcha. Mm. Okay.
That's sort of our main pairing sort of Morelia wise this year. We're I may pair the male back to the het female we bred last year. Again, I'll just see how she goes size wise and stuff, because I was pretty impressed with just a few of the hets that came out of that. So I may pair her and him again, but we'll see how she goes getting back up to size and everything. Being a first year breed, and I artificially incubated, but I was still blown away by, you know, how your female looks after she's just dropped a cluster of eggs. I was like, holy crap.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is not.
Yeah,
fun
so that's
at
our
all.
Sort of main. No,
okay.
No. Well, that's our main pairing. I've also got a pair of Womers that I'm going to pair this year as well, and that's just a pair of Tanami Womers that he's sort of got a little bit, slightly reduced sort of pattern on his neck, and she has a really definite orange belly. So I sort of wanted to try and compare them and see if I could work towards something with a reduced pattern, like, you know, starting to reduce the pattern, but still maintain a really bright orange stripe along the tummy. So,
right.
And they're just really cool babies.
Yeah.
So I wanted to put those guys together and see how we went.
Yeah, one was a cool. Yeah, I missed them. I used to have a pair, and I missed them. They were cool snakes. Not a lot of love here in the States for Womas. What about down there?
Oh yeah, I think they're a pretty popular snake down here. One of my mates, like he's just sort of gotten into snakes recently, and he bought an albino, a male albino off us, and then I think three or four weeks later he come and bought a het female off me, and then he's gotten me to put him in touch with my mate Brett to sort of he was interested in a Womer. So I think they, once you see them, you know, just how active and stuff they are, like if you get the interest into pythons, I think they're a really cool python to keep. They're just so active and inquisitive. They just seem to have like a funny little sort of personality, I guess.
Right.
They do. So your buddy's first python was a albino carpet python?
Yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah, I know.
What the hell is this crap?
Yeah,
I know.
Even
my mate Brady, like he's been keeping and breeding, you know, pythons and venomous snakes for a hell of a long time. And even he said, you know, he can't believe that these days you can just, you know, your first python could be an albino carpet python or a green tree python and stuff. Whereas I guess back in the old days they used to, you know, they'd start out with a coastal carpet python and breed them to sell the offspring and swap and sell and stuff to get a water python and, you know, work your way up and up and up. I guess it's,
yeah,
we're pretty spoiled nowadays, like I guess the people that have gotten into it later. Definitely.
Lucky
right.
Bastards. Anyway.
So so what's your approach with keeping carpets? I mean, how do you keep them?
From a hatchling, I'll use tubs. Like I've just got some racks that I've built, just using like a little 7 liter tub, and I'll sort of use them up depending on sort of how quick they grow. I don't mind feeding like, I guess, reasonably heavy for the first 12 months. Depends, I guess, what you call heavy. But I'd feed my hatchlings every sort of 4 to 5 days up until about 12 months of age. And, you know, they could sort of, I don't mind keeping them in a small tub like that up until they, you know, they get sort of between 6 and 12 months and then move them up into, like, a bit bigger tub. So I sort of prefer to keep them in a tub until they sort of get around the 18 months or so and then go into a cage. I'd sort of feeding-wise, I'll feed the babies, like I said, every sort of 4 to 5 days to a week, depending on, I guess, because I work shift work, I don't freak out if I don't get to feed them for 8 or 9 days, but I'll, you know, if it works, you know, I'd probably try and average it out every 5 days, I guess. Temperature-wise, I guess I'll probably keep the babies similar, maybe a degree or so higher, but temperature-wise, I'll keep all of my carpets at around, with a hot spot of around 32, 33 degrees, which I think is about 89.5 to 92 Fahrenheit.
Okay.
With all of the, I try and give them all perches because probably everyone up until my 5-year-old female, she's probably the only one that doesn't regularly use a perch. All the other guys seem to enjoy having a perch, especially the Darwins. They seem to like the perch a lot. So I sort of give in the bigger cages that I keep them in, they've all got access to a perch. In our sort of adult cages, I prefer to use like a belly heat rather than lights. I don't mind using lights and stuff in just like glass cages while they're smaller and stuff. If I'm cycling them through, you know, sort of between tubs to a little bit bigger glass cage or something like an ExoTerra or something that I've got available, I'll use lights on those, just right. Like your red lights. But sort of prefer to use the belly heat for the adults. I guess we're pretty lucky where I live, being in sort of central Queensland. You know, like I very rarely even see our adults use their heat tiles. Like the way that I've put the tiles in the adult cage is just heat cord siliconed underneath a tile and you know, set to around that 92 sort of degree mark. Just in general, even after feeds, a lot of the time they won't use it, especially through summer, because my room that I've got all my snakes in probably sticks around, you know, anywhere from, I guess, around 30 to 32, which is about 86 to 91.5, I think, Fahrenheit. It'll be in between there through the duration of the day and even overnight. It sort of doesn't go down too low. Most of the time I go in there, the adults won't even be on their heat, and they'll just be hanging out on their perches or curled up on top of their hide or something like that.
Right.
I don't use any sort of UV with them at all. I don't sort of, from what everyone a lot more experienced than me says, I guess they don't seem to need it.
Right.
I think it's probably debatable if it has anything to do with coloration and things like that. I don't know. I think you were trying to have a crack at that with your bread lies or something, weren't you, Eric?
Yeah, I was. I don't know. I don't know. I don't think that they need it, but I'm just curious if it helps them in some way, if it makes them healthier, you know.
Yeah.
You know, maybe with stimulates appetite, maybe, prevents respiratory infections or, you know what I mean? I don't know. I'm going to experiment with it. Who knows?
Yeah. No, we do try and sort of, I guess, try and take out our, especially our adults, we'll try and take outside for a bit of a wander around on the grass outside and stuff every now and then too. So like and the room that they're in, like, it has windows that are sort of open through the day and stuff. So I guess they probably get access to a bit of it. But yeah, I'm not too sure. I'm not worried about sort of having UV lights in with them anyway. Substrate, I pretty much just use newspaper for everything. Yeah, a bit undecided on the whole substrate thing. I think newspaper's a good thing, or butcher's paper. I use sort of like just an unprinted paper with the albinos.
Right.
Just because you know, if they sit in their water bowl or something and spill a bit of water, they get a bit of the markings come off on the from the ink. But yeah, I have tried sort of one substrate that I didn't mind. It was probably okay with the womers, but I'm a little bit undecided with the whole substrate thing. I think paper works well.
Yeah, I think it's easier to clean. I think it is easier to, I don't know, it makes me more regimented in cleaning, because when I was using like cypress mulch or something like that, you know, I would spot clean and I just didn't feel that it was getting as clean as I thought it should be.
Having to strip out all the paper and scrub it.
Yeah, for sure.
I agree.
Yeah. So I stick with paper.
But yeah, no, that's pretty much how I keep them. I feed everything rats as soon as I can. I've only sort of got one animal that doesn't want a bar of rats, and she's coming up on 3 years old and still won't have a bar of rats. So she's a little bit fun, but takes a lot of mice to feed her. But
now, is that a coastal or a Darwin?
She's a Darwin Coastal Cross. She's the one that's possibly got something on there, and she just doesn't want to go to the rats.
Can't make up her mind. Okay, so what about like breeding? Do you do anything special for breeding, or what's your approach with that?
I guess we're probably pretty lucky here. We get to just go with pretty much the natural weather of things. I don't do anything.
Uh-oh. Owen?
Yes.
I think we lost him for a sec.
No.
Oh, no.
Oh, God. We're
you don't do anything.
Ever.
Yeah. That's where he's leaving.
Shit.
He doesn't do anything.
Yeah. I don't do anything. I go by the seasons. And then he hung up because we asked that dumb question.
Yeah. You know, I was always curious as if, like, you know how you're breeding your corn snakes.
I think it's exactly the same over there. They just chuck them over there. You imagine that? It'd be great. Anyway, while we take this brief commercial break, let's check in with the booster. All right.
Yeah.
Look at that. Okay, we have sold 63 shirts, you lazy, lazy people. Oh, my God. We've sold, like, 10 in the past, like, 2 hours. I hate you guys so much. But we have sold 63 shirts and raised a total of $597. We're three away from $600. For the love of God, can someone just donate $3? I don't want to give an uneven number. It hurts me.
I think I can do that, but still.
We'll get that. We'll get that.
I'd like to get to, hold on, let me see if this is, this might be him.
Okay.
Is that you?
Eric.
Hey, is that you, Troy?
Okay,
yeah,
good. We found you again.
There we go.
Excellent.
Yeah, sorry, I don't know what happened. Skype decided to drop out there.
You are calling from across several oceans and another continent, so, you know, we kind of forgive you.
Yeah.
It's all right. So
so you were saying, yeah, you just kind of follow the seasons and let them do their thing.
Yeah, well, I guess because, there's a lot of, you will see a lot of coastal carpet pythons in this sort of area. They're, you know, native to this sort of area, so... I haven't had to do it. Like, I thought it's, you know, it's probably not what everyone wants to hear, but it's probably one of the simplest ways. Like, I didn't cool my snakes at all. Because I only give with the females, and like the females that I was trying to breed, especially the adults, you know, their cage is completely just at, you know, basically ambient temperature, apart from their heat tile that they've got access to. So right. I didn't worry about cooling in any way for the females. They just got the natural, you know, sort of the natural temperature, I guess, like over the winter. For us, I guess you get, you know, you're still probably getting up around in the daytime. Our day, winter days, on average, I guess are probably still around the 20 to 25 degrees Celsius. So it's about, I think, 68 to 77 Fahrenheit. And your night lows are probably around the 12 to 14 degrees Celsius, which is about 53 to 58 Fahrenheit. So apart, like I didn't, you know, a lot of the time, even, I guess, it's pretty surprising, because you'll still see a lot of the time, like, you know, they won't spend all night on their heat, even in that temperature, even though they've got access to it, they won't spend all night on it. So I guess, you know, they sort of, with the temperature that we're lucky, that I'm lucky enough to have access to, I guess, the natural temperature, I just left the window open, pretty much. that was about it. The male, I didn't have a cage available other than one that I was using a heat light on.
Okay.
And about all I did for him was I just switched the heat light off of a night. I still gave him access to heat through the day. I still fed everyone the whole time up until they sort of refused. So even once I started introducing the male to the females, I was still, any time I'd separate him and give him a break, I'd still feed everyone. I just sort of fed a little bit smaller meals, I guess.
Right.
Because I think it was, you know, like I was really paranoid about, you know, making sure that they were healthy enough and getting enough nutrient to be able to produce like a good fertile clutch. And my male, I got him as a yearling, but he was a pretty small yearling.
Okay.
So I was trying to keep on feeding him, you know, up until the point where I assumed that he would start refusing it once he got interested in the girls, but he didn't care. He ate the whole time.
That works.
Yeah, I think because he was probably fed a little on the leaner side as he was. Growing up in the 12 months prior to me getting him, anytime he sees food, he thinks it's Christmas and he's all over it.
Yeah, it's like this year I noticed with my girls, after they came out of cool down, or for you would be closing the window, I started feeding them small meals. And I noticed that immediately I started seeing follicular growth. Now, I don't know if, like, going into breeding season, maybe I could have fed them a little more and wouldn't have to feed them coming out of it. But with the follicular growth that I saw, I'm going to be trying that again, because it was like as soon as I fed them, boom, they just ovulated. Now, maybe it was just a coincidence. I'm not sure. But, you know, I've seen that with a few people try that, and you know, it seemed to help push females along that maybe were sitting on the edge, you know, like teetering there, like maybe they're going to go, maybe they're not going to go. So, it's interesting.
And are you still feeding the females now?
No. I fed them two meals. I fed them small rats, medium rats. And I just fed them, like, right after, like, you know, it warmed up. I offered them a meal. They took it. And then I guess it was, like, maybe a week or two later, I offered them another meal, and they took that. Put the male in with the female. I noticed some locks, and then she just swelled up, like, boom, like, right there.
Yeah, yep.
And I tried to describe it to Owen, but like, it's almost like when you feel in their belly scales, it feels like their actual sides are too big for their belly scales. Like normally it feels like they kind of fit together and it feels uniform. And then when you're holding them, it feels like now it feels like, I don't know, their pants don't fit or something. You know what I mean? It's like, that's the only way I can describe it. But that's how I kind of know. I don't ever see them basking belly up or anything like that. I know Owen, he sees that with his girls, but I don't see that. Do you see that with yours?
I only see that with a few girls. Only a few girls, but yeah.
How about you?
My coastal, female coastal, I did, but she was probably fairly overweight when I bred her. Because I guess being our first snake, we had no idea what we were doing with her when we first got her, and she was I think she would have probably been 8 months old when we got her, and the breeder was still feeding her pinky mice and told us that's what to feed her. So she was pretty tiny, and then once I had a mate who used to catch the snakes down south, he said, oh, yeah, no, get them onto the rats as soon as you can. So we sort of started on pinky rats and went from there. And then once I became good friends with Brett, the guy who I'd sort of consider my mentor, he said, you know, she's pretty small for her size. You know, you want to start upping her food size and stuff. And but then we went a little bit overboard because we felt bad that we'd sort of starved 18 months. So by the time she hit 3.5 years old, she was a bit tubby. So I don't know whether it's got to do because she was a bit oversized that she wouldn't be fully belly up, but like, you know, 2/3 of the way. Whereas the Darwin, she was only 2.5 when we bred our Darwin Vesta last year. She was a good size to breed, I thought, and she didn't sort. She wasn't sort of belly up, but she would sort of lean to her side a little bit.
Gotcha.
But
go ahead.
Oh, you know, I was just going to say. So it was probably around June that we started to pair the boy up with the girls. And I sort of the first couple of times just put him in. The first time I put him in with our Darwin. Head for albino, and he seemed to just want to try and run away and get out of the cage. So had no sort of interest in going near her. So I got a fresh shed off my mate Brett's mail and put that in his cage with him overnight. And he didn't try and wrestle it, but he you could tell it had him a bit perked up, and then put him in the next day and put him in overnight. I didn't actually witness mating, but that night, but then come in the next morning and they were sort of locked up for a few hours. So the way I sort of did it was I'd put him in for sort of 2 to 3 days, take him out, give him, you know, a day off, and then put him in with the other female, same again, sort of 2 to 3 days, and then I'd take him out for a couple of days and feed him, and then sort of go back through the cycle. So I was pairing him for, I guess, the best part of about a month and a half.
Okay.
And I didn't actually witness a lot of lockups. But, you know, witnessed the odd few lockups, and then and sort of I just kept swapping in between the females up until the Darwin had her shed, which I assumed was the prelay shed, which turned out to be right. So yeah, that was sort of how I paired them up.
Cool. Now, with incubation, are you guys do you guys try maternal incubation down there in Australia, or is that kind of like a no-no?
I guess it scared the crap out of me, so I didn't go anywhere near it. For my first year, I contemplated it and thought about it. I think I thought about it for about an hour, in the middle of the night one night whether I'd let the coastal maternal incubate hers, and then I thought, nah, it's too late now. I haven't, you know, researched enough to set things up to make sure she's got access to what she needs, so nah, we'll take them out. I don't think it's something that you know is necessary. Is like, oh, you know, you go maternally incubate, you're crazy. I think it's still a lot of people still do maternally incubate, whether planned or unplanned. I'm pretty sure that there still is a number of people that actually plan to maternally incubate their eggs, but I think with the, you know, I guess with the, you know, the popularity of things like, you know, like the overwater method and people's success rate with it, I think a lot of people are more sort of leaning towards artificial incubation, and I guess, you know, thermostats and things these days are pretty reliable. So I think, especially, I guess, as the, you know, the sort of projects that a lot of people would be working on nowadays, I guess they're a bit scared to probably, you know,
take the chance.
Trust. Yeah, take the chance in it. It's definitely something that I want to do in the future.
Right.
I guess I'd need to look into it a lot more before I did it myself, because I was like paranoid and ridiculous enough just with eggs in the incubator, let alone letting the mother do it. I think I'd go insane.
I mean, your first clutch when you saw that baby pip out of the egg, isn't that the coolest feeling, though? Isn't that the sight that you see? I mean, you can't beat it, you know?
It's
so exciting.
Awesome.
Oh, well, like, I had to go away for work for 5 days, the day that they were, you know, on day 55. So I was freaking out like you wouldn't believe. And
I just thought,
this is not cool. I don't know what to do. And I spoke to my friend, and he said, you know, well, it's 55 days, and the temperature you've incubated at, like, I tried to incubate at around 31.5. I'll probably go with 2 heat cords in my incubator next year, because it did get a little bit of variance. But you know, 55 days, and then I was going away for 5 days for work, and I didn't want. My whole plan was that when the first head pipped, I was gonna pip the rest of the eggs, and we've only, you know, my little girl's 2 years old now, but at the time, you know, she's only sort of 18 months, so I was pretty flying around the house for my fiance while when I'm not home as well. So I was speaking to my mate, and he said, you know, day 55, it's not going to hurt you to, you know, just put a little pip in each of the eggs just to make sure that they can get out. And and so I went through pips the Darwin clutch on day 55 and freaked out, because it was like, I can't tell which is an albino and which is a het, because I get some of them. I was pretty confident, but otherwise I was like, God damn, what is that? Like, because I guess they still fully hadn't developed their colouring, and at 55 days, so I was thinking, well, that seems a bit weird that they haven't fully developed their pigment, you know, all of them. So then I spent 5 days at work, I think, ringing my mate every day.
I would do the same thing. Yeah.
Oh my God, what's wrong? Going on, and my fiance was keeping an eye on them each day, and I was just going nuts, and so I think I got home on the night of day 59, and I went in, opened up the container and looked through, and I could sort of tell, alrighty, now I know what's going on. I wonder why they haven't left the eggs. But then next morning, day 60 was the first head out, and that was like, hell yeah. I was, amazing, crazily excited. And, you just, it blows you away. It's so cool.
Was the first one out an albino?
The first one out was a het. Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the hets was the first one out.
Yeah.
Drum roll.
Still, they weren't too far out, too far behind that, and they were, I guess I think it was over 2 days the rest of them all came out.
Okay.
Majority of them sort of, you know, over the first 24 hours, and then there was a couple of stragglers behind there. The whole clutch was pretty much, you know, there was only a few grams variance in that whole clutch. They sort of averaged about 28 grams for each of the babies.
Gotcha.
So I guess they're probably about an average size.
Right.
Cool.
But that was that Darwin clutch. I was really happy with when she laid them. They looked really nice, perfect eggs. She laid 16 eggs. I think it was about 750 grams for the clutch. And 16 eggs, all looked perfect. And then I think within 7 or 8 days into it, there was the slightest difference in them. And I was like, so I freaked out. I took a photo and I posted it on the Morelia Python forum. And I think it was... I think it was Julie from GFX and another couple of people commented on there and said, no, they look fine, stop stressing, because, you know, I had a million gauges running in there. Oh, no, humidity's not good enough. Oh, no, I'm freaking out. They don't look good. They look like they've changed, and everyone's like, they look
They're all going to die. Yeah.
Forget
I've been
about
there
it.
Too.
Leave them alone. So, ended up whole 16 hatched, and it was a perfect split of 50-50. We got eight heifer albinos and eight albinos.
Gotcha.
So cool. Yeah, they were a real clutch.
Yeah, go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, the other clutch was also a, it went 60 days as well, the Coastal Darwin Cross. It wasn't as nice a looking clutch sort of thing though, which I don't know. I'm not 100% sure what the go was there. I did give both of them access to a nest box, and neither of them used it and laid it on the paper. And I think they may. I was away at work. It was so unlucky for my fiance, because she had to get the eggs off both females, because it worked out that I ended up being at work the night both of them laid.
That's
but she came out of that unscathed. She did really well. Yeah. No, she's really good at coming through on the hard jobs. I seem to be away whenever anything difficult happens. It's just so bizarre. It's so bizarre. she pulled the clutch from both of them and came out unscathed, which was all good. And... I think the Coastal Darwin Cross, I think that clutch had a bit of newspaper stuck to the bottom of the eggs, which I didn't sort of think that would be too much of a drama, but I don't know whether it was that or there might have just been, you know, whether she had a little bit of crap come out when she was laying them. But from pretty much about 10 days in, you know, you started to have one sort of go a bit funny, and it's starting to get a little bit of mould, and I tried, I guess, every mold solution under the sun and kept a lot of them going, but I think out of 24 eggs, we ended up losing 5 eggs. One of them was weird. It was full term, but it was two headed, and it obviously didn't come out of the egg or anything, but it was fully coloured and everything. It was all pretty kinked up and had two heads and stuff, but so that was a bit of a weird one. And but then there was a few that just died from mould over the last sort of 10 days. But we also did get a pair of one set of twins in that clutch, so I think we lost 5 eggs out of the 24, but still got the 20 babies. But yeah, the twins were tiny. I couldn't believe how small they were. I think the smallest of the two twins was 8 grams.
Cool.
It was tiny little thing. But so yeah, that was pretty interesting clutch. You know, like compared to the pure Darwin clutch, it was you know, lost a few eggs of mould. You know, had the weird malformed one, had a set of twins, so that was a bit of a trippy clutch, that one.
Wow.
Still come out with some nice animals, though. Some nice little pets that some people have got, anyway.
Right. Cool. So what's going to be your next project with carpet pythons? What's the next thing on your horizon that you want to acquire into your collection?
Well, the next thing that I'm sort of heading for with the animals I've currently got is the two caramels I've got. I want to try and sort of start heading towards the Sunglow thing. Obviously, caramel coastals, though, so they will be across, but you can't sort of get away from that over here until they there was those pictures of a pure coastal albino, but nothing more has come out about that, so
yeah
I've got a couple of caramels there that I want to put an albino over one, and I'd like to get another nice striped caramel to put over the other one, get some super caramels and then work on some sunglows as well.
Cool.
I guess really like to get into, like, say, like an Atlantic coastal. But, yeah. I know Larks has got the Atlantics over here. But I'm sort of just waiting to see what pans out from another project at the moment.
Okay. Very cool. What about, like, what would you say is the hottest carpet python breeding project down in Australia right now? What would you say that everybody's, like, oohing and aahing after?
Oh, I think it'd be pretty hard-pressed to go past the silver pepper, the Murray Darling, the inland. That's...
Oh, heck yeah.
I think that's a big one.
Oh, yeah, they're awesome. Oh,
man. I'd imagine that would have been a pretty popular show on the other week when the Aussie Reptile Show did a podcast with Darren, the guy who has them. And, yeah, I think that would have been a pretty popular one. They're pretty amazing. They're really beautiful.
Have you seen them in person?
No, I'd love to.
Just pictures? Okay.
Yeah, no, just the pictures, and there was a good few pictures that got put up when he was going on that show, and there's been a few pictures from the expos that he had him on show with, but
yeah, that was a good show. He gave a lot of in-depth history of the whole project, which I thought was really cool, you know.
Yeah,
for sure. There's it's still funny, I guess. I don't know what it's like over there, but there still seems to be a lot of... Myself, I'm not heavily involved with all the big names or anything in the hobby in Australia, but, like, you're still just from groups that you're a part of and things, you still see, like, there's a lot of people still keep, a lot of cards close to their chest, I guess, in the hobby in Australia. You think it's like a real exciting thing when you hear people... Like him talk about, be so open about sort of how the project is, where it's come from and how it's gone and everything like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would agree with you, man. If I'd probably give my fingers or my left arm to have one of them in my snake room, but yeah, they're cool. Cool stuff. So with what would be the tip that this will be your second round breeding and all that kind of stuff. And what would you say that you've learned from last season and that you would do different or any kind of tip that you could give somebody that wants to start like a breeding project with carpets or any pythons or any reptiles for that matter?
I'd consider myself really lucky with having like a mentor and really good friend like my mate Brett who has had like so much experience. I think if you've got a friend or someone that can sort of that you can even someone that you could purchase some good quality animals off that can give you that sort of knowledge and I guess mentorship in regards to what to do with the animals, I think that's probably one of the you know, biggest things that if you can have access to, like, I think that makes a huge difference. I read everything that I can in regards to you know, keeping and breeding of pythons, and that seems to, you know, if you know someone that can give you good information and you can work out how to sift through some good quality information in research and things yourself, I think you know, you're probably off to a good start, and you know, probably just try and ensure that you can source some good quality animals if you can, which there doesn't seem to be too much of a shortage of nowadays. There's a lot of guys breeding some really nice animals that you can start some nice projects off with.
Cool. So, in case for those people who don't know, I'm picking up my first chondro on Sunday. So I'm going to need some chondro talk, especially from someone who can pretty much walk outside and maybe find one. So let's talk about chondros. You said you only have one, which is okay because you have one more than I do and one more than Eric does. So good job. let's talk about your chondro. Where'd you get him? Why'd you get him? And what are you keeping him in? And how is that compared to your carpets?
Yeah, well, I got him. He's coming on 2 years old. He'd be just over 2 years old, actually. He was from a Biak type female to a native Aussie male. And he was a red baby. I'd saw my mate that had the pair of them and just thought, man, those things just look insane. They're beautiful. And then when he produced a clutch, I saw the yellow on the red babies, and yeah, I was like, yeah, got to have a red baby. So that was just when you see them as a hatchling, man, it was a no-brainer. Had to go with it, and pretty much from the start, I kept him in just like a little glass exoteric cage. I think they're just 60 high by 45 by 45.
Okay.
Actually, no, they might be 30 by 45 by 30. Yeah. Just the smallest one, one of the smaller ones at all, you know, gave him access to probably four different little perches, and put some leaves and stuff in there to keep him something to hide behind. I covered the sides in with just like some plywood, I just made a little box of plywood box to fit around the glass windows, just to try and keep the heat in a bit better, and also to you know, give him a bit more seclusion, I guess, so it's not, doesn't feel exposed. I've always kept him heated with a ceramic running on just like a pulse proportional thermostat. I've always pretty much, I missed him pretty regularly. Like I probably, you know, most days I'll miss him. I went through a period probably over the last couple of months where I guess it's one of those things where, like, you hear a lot of people doing things a fair bit differently, and then you try it and then, you know, it doesn't work for you. So I sort of tried to back off a lot on the misting, but I think because I was using a substrate in that enclosure, I think the substrate was sort of sucking all the moisture out of there, even.
Right.
And I'd reduced the misting and stuff because we started his last few sheds, he'd shed fine, perfectly, just apart from the top half of his face, and he wasn't all that keen to have you hold there and peel his face and eye caps off. Although he's a good sport, he's never had a go at anyone. But that's another thing that my fiance is awesome at, holding him down to peel the skin off his face. I normally drop the heat probably slightly just as he's coming into shed, but I keep him a little bit lower temperature-wise. I try to keep him, you know, his hot spot's probably around the 30-degree mark, so about 86. And I might bump that back just, you know, just a degree or so when he's in shed. That was sort of just to try and stop the sort of the, his face drying out so much, because he seemed to like to sit right under it when he was in shed. But I've gone back to just using paper towel as a substrate in his enclosure now, because he's in a bigger enclosure now, just a big black melamine enclosure. But I gone away from the substrate because I just want to see. I've got a feeling that might have been sucking all the moisture out of the air. And that's why we got a few rough sheds with him, because prior to that, thinking about it now, like prior to that, his sheds were always fine. It seems once we started using the substrate. I know a lot of people use things like peat moss and stuff like that, which probably that may be a better option and stuff, but I thought, I'm just going to go back to the paper towel for now and wait till his next shed and make sure that goes sweet, and then we'll start thinking about it from there. He was a funny one. He was never interested in mice from the get go. The way that he started feeding was on pinky rat heads. So that was pretty interesting. We got him, and he loved the pinky rat heads too. He did knock one back, but he wouldn't have a bar of mice. So obviously a pinky rat's way too big, and a pinky rat head was a nice little size for him. So he was on that for the first couple of months. So that was a pretty messy start to getting him to have him feeding. And he's always been on rats. Nowadays, I still don't feed him large meals. Like, he probably gets like a 6 week old rat, which is a bit smaller than like a small rat, I guess. They're probably the equivalent size to like a pretty big mouse. I'm feeding him weekly to 10 days at the moment. Even though he's a pretty slim sort of guy when you compare him to, say, to other carpets and stuff. I've never sort of really been worried about the prolapse thing or anything like that. I've just speaking with some other people and stuff. I'm not too sure, but it seems possible like that could be more, you know, sort of along a genetic thing a bit, as much as an overfeeding thing and stuff like that. I know, like, his parents, you know, they were fed good size meals and regularly and never had issues with it, so I sort of just stuck with what my mate was feeding his the parents of him. So yeah, he turned himself off food at about probably at about 18 months old. It was like he decided that he was ready to starve for breeding season straight away, and even though he wasn't real big, but so he went off food for a month or two there, didn't sort of lose any condition, but he came back onto it, and then yeah, I've just sort of kept him on about a 6 week old rat every week to 2 weeks, and that seems to be keeping him going well at the moment.
All right, well, that works. So what size, now I know you only have one, and you're planning, I bet you're planning on breeding when he gets to an adult size, and you're also planning on finding a girl for him. What are your thoughts on feeding chondros, and what size do you plan on getting your chondros before you start to try to breed?
I think I'd probably, main difference, I guess, the main difference will be sort of, I guess, where I'm not too worried about letting a female carpet, you know, if she's got, you know, good size to have a go at breeding at sort of the 2.5 year old mark, I'd probably wait another year with a chondro.
Okay.
just because I think it, you know, being a little bit smaller snake and stuff, I think no doubt that a lot of people probably still breed them at 2.5. It's just the whole, you know, you just
your
feel
comfort.
Like they are like a little bit more sensitive and a little bit more delicate sort of snake.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like our boy there, he's 2 years old, and, you know, you get him out and you can just treat him and handle him just like any other carpet. But I guess for the first 12 months he was like a little, you know, you treated him like a piece of dried spaghetti you didn't want to crack.
I imagine that's what I'm going to be doing with, you know, mine. So I could definitely see that, especially with all the warnings that people give you beforehand of what you can do to their spines and stuff. So I could see that. So you also have a rough scale python, which I'm insanely jealous of. So what's your approach to the rough scale python? You know, how do you keep him?
The one I've got's a female. She's
okay. She's
same age as my green tree. She's just on 2 years old. She's pretty small for a size, but she's the pickiest eater I've got out of any python that I've kept. She fed like a machine for the first sort of 12 months, and then decided that it was time to just hang up the hat and just feed once every now and then when she felt like it. She hasn't lost any condition, but she sort of just hasn't been growing like she doesn't grow. I've recently moved her from an enclosure back into a tub to see if that'll make a difference, to see if she'll turn back onto the feed. But I know some not particularly clutch mates, but from the same original parents and stuff that I got her from, like, they've been finicky sort of feeders as well. I keep her just like I do with all my other carpets, temperature wise. She likes a perch. She's like really active and likes to get up on a perch and wander around and stuff. Incredibly placid, like really, which I was quite surprised with. You heard a lot when they sort of first were coming out that they could be pretty, I guess, over the top.
hell on earth is what I've heard. And, yeah, so, you know.
Yeah, yeah, and I guess, you know, everyone's seen the video of Brian Barczyk at the Reptile Expo in Sydney getting absolutely nailed by one.
I love that video. He gets, like, destroyed, like, 8 times by that thing. It was good. That is, in my sick, twisted mind, that's what really turned me on to them, so it's okay. So.
Yeah, no, well, so I guess I was a little bit paranoid when we first got her, but my mate had gotten a female 12 months prior to when I got one, and she was just like the epitome of a puppy dog tame python. He got her for his wife, and she'd be wandering around with a, you know, wrapped around her hand, just cruising around the house, going to the, you know, going where the rats are and stuff like that. She wouldn't even bat an eyelid and was always super placid. So, and
wow.
To get to handle one and feel it, and I was like, man, that's the coolest snake. I'm going to have to get one. So
yeah.
He was, 12 months later, he was getting himself a male and asked if I wanted him to pick me up a female. So we got her, and yeah, she's really cool. I only got the one female at the moment, but that's just at the moment.
Cool. So what would you say is the coolest thing about them? You know, like, have you ever seen obviously your female's docile, so she doesn't do the threat display with the bottom jaw, or is it just the feel of them that's really cool, or what really turns you on to them?
Yeah, I'll just the... You know, like, when you get her out and stuff, she's got, like, a super, I guess, inquisitive personality. Like, she's really... It definitely reminds me of handling our green tree as well. She's looking at everything up high and looking to reach right out and stretch out really far and sort of check things out. I love the feel of their scales. It's so different to to what you're used to.
Yeah.
And they're just like a really, I guess, because she's so blessed, it makes me think, you know, that she's such a cool snake too, because she's so beautiful. Basically, everything that I've got really is pretty well handleable, but like it's just, I guess, the different feel and everything, and you just think, man, that's just a cool snake. I'll look forward to, hopefully this year I'll get a male and start getting him growing up, and because I'd like to have a crack at him in the future, even though they're probably not something that's as popular in Australia now as I guess when they first come out. But I'd still like to have a hand at breeding some of those guys. I think they're a really cool snake.
Yeah, absolutely. So we got some miscellaneous questions for you to at the end of the show, and this is just, you know, like a free-for-all. So if you could have any python species, no limitations, you don't have to worry about
laws
or anything like that, what would it be? What would you keep and why?
That's such a hard question. I think it'd be hard to go past like a really big albino Burmese python. Like you just when you see them on. I'd probably be scared the hell out. Probably scared the hell out of me to see one in person, man. But like, how impressive are they? They look amazing when you see you see the guys on you, some people on YouTube and stuff with videos of their collections and some really big albino berms. They're just awesome. I think probably just because they're such a massive, big spectacle of an animal. They're really gorgeous. Although, like, I guess I'd never been exposed to.
Uh-oh. Ah, shit. Come on.
He's never been exposed.
He's never been exposed to, and then cliffhanger. Tune in next week for some more answers.
Yeah.
Now again, for another brief commercial break, let's just check the booster.
We're up to 65 shirts. Wait, hold on, let me refresh.
65 shirts. $623 raised.
Yeah, that's awesome.
We are so close. And apparently I was told that I'm being bossy. So
yeah,
I don't care. I don't care.
You bloody
bastard. You people drove me to this. So...
Nice. Well, I don't know. Maybe
the hell?
Maybe his phone died.
I hope not.
I just sent Owen a picture of a snake that he didn't even know he made.
you sent me a picture of this caramel, and you sent it to me because you send me pictures of this shit all the time. You're like, look at this pretty thing. I'm like, wow, what is that? And then you tell me it's like some blind jungle from this and this person. So you sent me a picture of this carpet python. And... you got to remember, I've not seen some of the baby carpet pythons that I've bred since they were babies. So I have no idea what they look like. So you send me this carpet python. I'm like, what the hell is that? That thing is gorgeous. And you're like, it's a caramel that you produced. And I'm like, I made that? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's pretty cool. I love the
stripes.
She's
gorgeous.
Yeah.
I love her head pattern, just the black on her head, that little, like, trident thing on her head. It's just awesome looking. Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Shit. she's gorgeous. And, yeah, I know who her parents are just by looking at her. Wow.
Yeah, you can tell.
Yeah. Yeah, that's Venus and Remus's kid. Oh, my God.
Yeah, speaking of that,
wow.
I got to get pictures of them so I can put it
Mommy and Daddy?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I can get you that. I can get you Remus's parents, too.
I don't know. Maybe we lost Nathan. I'm thinking maybe his phone died or something.
I hope he calls back in. Otherwise, we're just going to be stuck with the two of us.
Yeah, who wants that?
Nobody wants to hear that.
Well, not anymore.
We're
almost down to the end of the show anyway. We're just going to wrap it up with...
True.
At least we got... figure out what kind of python species you would like. Everybody goes.
He wanted Burmese pythons.
I love it.
And you, And, you know, he doesn't have to be afraid because, in my opinion, all the berms that I ever saw that were psychopaths were normals. I guess the albinos were just inbred so much that they're just, like, something's wrong with their head. So you don't need to worry about it.
Yeah, they're just silly, man.
Oh, my God, we're at 66!
All right. We got 66. There he is. He's back on. We thought your phone died or something. You there? Hello?
Hello?
Oh, there
he is. All right, good. Australia has not sunken into the sea. Okay. So, we were concerned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
So
interesting.
Let's continue on. We know it's the Burmese python. So, Eric, what's the next one?
We kind of hit on this before, but I guess it's what's going to be your next big purchase as far as reptiles go? Caging, would it be?
Reptile-wise, it just happened, and I'm just waiting on delivery of it now. We bought a female albino spotted python. That was pretty significant.
Nice.
Wow.
Chunk of coin to buy that.
Cool.
Yeah, so that's one of the sort of future things to future projects. Never had anything to do with anoresia. And then my friend got an albino spotted, and I saw that and I was like, man, that's like damn cool. That is really cool. And I saw there's a few of them that have interested me now. I think that's probably another species that we'll get involved with a little bit. Like I said, my fiance just got given a little wheat belt, and it's a cool little guy. So we'll probably look further in the future. I don't know if you would have seen, but there was Snake Ranch put out some photos of piebald Stimpsons.
Yes, all those.
Yes, people went apeshit for that. Yeah.
Yeah, they just need to find a carpet.
If only can somebody get. How many of you people are wandering around out there? Find me a piebald carpet.
I know. You think they would have found it by now? I don't know, man.
Jesus.
I don't know. I hope they do.
Yeah, me too.
We'll see.
Oh,
so
I think that'd probably be like, the massive game changer popularity wise when it came to carpets. If something like a piebald came to surface, I think that'd be a huge thing.
Oh, hell yeah. You know, because to me, carpet pythons are the perfect pet python. I mean, they're perfect. They're big, but they're not too big. They're pretty bulletproof. You rarely have issues with them. They eat good. They shed good, you know. And then to put a piebald in that, oh, shazam. That would just...
Done. So where do I sign? Get it to me. Yeah.
Can you? What do you think they would go for, man? What do you think the price would be for
something
like that?
What do you think albinos? Were you looking at 10 grand for a worm with teeth?
20,000? 50,000? 100,000? I don't know. Crazy.
That's the first couple breedings. Yeah.
Oh, you wouldn't. Yeah,
especially if it's a set.
It'd be insane. I'd imagine the price would have to be insane. Even just the price of like you say, albinos when they first come out in Australia were pretty impressive. I think they were up around the $25,000 mark the first time they came out.
Wow.
The very first release of them, and I know a few people that still paid, in the $5,000 to $10,000 mark for albino Darwins or green trees. Super lucky now, man, the price that we can pay for them now.
Right. You came in at the right time.
Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah. Definitely.
So are you a rat guy or are you strictly cages? As far as, your adults? Racks are a no-no or cages are a must?
All my adults are cages. I've sort of gone with the same setup that my mate built his at. and you know, like they're a good size, I think, and it's like a 3-bay high, you know, with the heat tiles in a corner of each one, and you can mount a perch in there, and just made out of melamine, and they're I think that's, you know, sort of perfect size for an adult carpet. Maybe not for some of the ones that Owen keeps, because I think he's got monsters, hasn't he?
I do. They are.
I don't think it's a bad thing for people to be keeping adult carpets in some of the racks that are available now. Like some of the racks you see, you know, they've got plenty of room to move, and I guess especially once you get into bigger collections and stuff, it's probably a lot more hygienic to have a rack. You know, a rack full, because you can get through, you know, you can see what's happening and get through and clean them a lot easier. So I don't have anything against racks, but for myself, I'd prefer the adults in the cages. We're just looking at relocating. We're going to move house in the next month, so that's what we're on the lookout for at the moment, is a house with a good-sized snake room, because this one's not big enough.
That's awesome. That's always the, should I go with this house or not? And it's like, you know, let me see the basement, or let's see a spare bedroom or something. See the size. Too small.
Speaking to guys at work, and you say, you know, you're looking for looking to move to a new place, and they're like, oh, how come you're moving? And it's like, oh, I haven't got enough
room in the basement. I outgrew the snake room.
So are you a reptile vendor, or do you – well, I actually don't even know, like, what's the situation. I see, like, shows down in Australia, but I don't know how popular they are, if there's that many. Are you a guy that's going to eventually vend, or are you just a reptile attendee to a show?
Yeah, no, just an attendee. I'll actually – went to the first reptile show that I've been to just last year. Went to the Scales and Tails Expo down there, the one that Troy Kulgowski and those guys run. Really, really cool too. I was my fiance took us all down there for like myself and our kids. We went down there for my birthday, because my birthday was in November. So that was a really cool birthday present. We travelled down to Ipswich, down near Brisbane, and went to the Reptile Expo, and then to the dinner afterwards, and that was awesome. Loved it, and really cool. Got to meet Justin Gelander and get our book signed and stuff, so that was really cool. He's a really nice guy.
He's a great guy.
Yeah.
He's so smart,
Oh, yeah, like, he did a really good presentation too, I guess, because, you know, it's, I guess you guys, I think I'd emailed you a while ago hassling you about questions about some possible outcomes and stuff, Eric, because, you know, you guys got a lot better handle on genetics, I guess, than most people do over here.
Right.
A really good presentation that Justin did, actually, on genetics. That was a really, really cool presentation. It was a great expo. I can't wait to go again next year. But that's probably sort of the closest one that we've got access to. And even that is still, Queensland's a pretty big bloody state. So, like, even that's like a 12-hour drive down to there.
Wow.
Man,
I would love to go to that.
Yeah,
oh,
it was awesome.
I would love to. Can we? We can do that. We can manage it.
You set up a booth right there.
Yeah.
There you go. Okay. So here's if you could go on a herping trip and you could travel anywhere in the world without limitations, where would you go and why?
Oh, man. I'd love to, I'd even love to just go, like, you know, here in Australia, to go into, like, the Iron Range, like your native habitat of the green trees, to see some of those guys in the wild. That's, you know, probably a simple one. I'd love to get over to, you know, to the US, not so much just for the herping side of things, but just to go, you know, like do a trip through all of your expos and things like that. I think some of the things that you guys do is really cool, like with ICAST and like your Carpet Fest and stuff like that. Like, I think that sort of thing would be a really cool thing to, you know, do a trip over and get to see some, attend and see some of those sort of things.
I think
herp-wise, man, like I'd love to go somewhere like Africa just to have someone who knew what they were doing take you herp and after some of the venomous snakes over there, because they're pretty impressive.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And last question, what, in your opinion, is the best species of Morelia and why?
I love the. I'd probably my love, I guess, is the Darwins. I really love the Darwins, and it's, you know, it's probably just because, you know, the first time I saw an albino Darwin was like, holy man, that thing is beautiful. they're probably, you know, more the ones that I you know, would think would be the, just in my opinion, that's the best species. There's so many of them, but like I think like the whole, you know. The whole lot of Morelia, like there's not one that you wouldn't want. Like it's really hard to say, you know, put your name on one.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it depends on exactly what you're into and stuff. Like I know, even just looking at like Casper's putting pictures of the Bolans up a lot lately. Like I'd never been sort of exposed to Bolans, and those things are beautiful. They're gorgeous. So they're an impressive one. You know, like there's I'd love to see the Owen Pellies in person.
Yeah.
So I don't know, are they still Morelia? I thought I read something the other day. I think they were trying to say they're not going to be Morelia now or something.
Yeah, they're with the Scrubs. I don't care. They got grandfathered in, so.
Oh, okay. We did that.
To me, they're still Morelia. Well, I don't know.
Got it.
But yeah, no, I think like they're, you know, they're a really cool looking snake. I'd love to see them in person. At that expo, at the Scales and Tails Expo, Gavin Bedford did a talk on them and had a lot of pictures, and he was putting up a lot of pictures of them and stuff like that. Some cool looking snakes. So. But yeah, my favourite, I guess, are the Darwins. I really love the Darwins. I think they're, you know, you can see a lot of similarities between them and the IJs, and coloration-wise, I guess.
Mm.
Which is, I really love the contrast you can get. You know, I have like some really beautiful black colours with the oranges and stuff inside your patterning and yeah, I think you see some pretty beautiful Darwins around. So that's probably my favourite. Like I say, man, it's hard to go. it's hard to pick one, but
the
variation in colours and everything. I think probably the only thing that I don't have a huge sort of interest in is jungles, and I think that's mainly just because of the rap that they get. I think they get a pretty good rap for being jerks.
There you go. Yeah, you know, out of all the carpets, probably, and I know that sounds crazy, but they're probably the one that I get excited about the least. I don't know why. Maybe because it just seems like it's everybody has it. I don't know. It's just weird. But I mean, I love them. Don't get me wrong. But I don't know. When I'm in my collection and I'm looking at my snakes, I'm usually looking at IJs, inlands, or coastals. You know, so it's, I don't know. But to each their own, you know. That's why Morelia
is
so
true.
Cool, because there's so many.
Again, another good reason.
Yes, absolutely. So what kind of, I guess this brings us to the end. So, like, where can people find out what you have going on? Do you have a Facebook page, a website? Where can we check out your collection and stuff?
Yeah, no, the best thing is I only just recently started it up a few months ago, and that was just the Facebook page, which is just Spellbinding Serpents, which I think is www.facebook.com/spellbindingserpents. And that's try to put photos up there reasonably regularly. We've probably only sort of been putting up a picture every, you know, a couple of pics a week. And it was sort of, I just wanted to sort of start to put something on there that people could have a look at and see, you know, get a little bit of an idea of what we had. And I guess like, I haven't really, you know, sort of promoted too much like to, you know, selling animals or anything through it, because we sort of only had the two clutches and was keeping it pretty small and stuff. But it was just, eventually I'd like to, we'll set up a website under the same name and stuff, but it was, yeah, if you want to have a look at any of the animals that we've got or some pictures of the, of, you know, some hatchies and stuff from last season, you can jump on there and get in touch with us. Otherwise, just Nathan Troy on Facebook.
Cool. All right. Anything else you want to hit us up with before we call it?
No. I just wanted to say thanks heaps for the opportunity to come on and have a chat. I was a little bit worried about how we'd go to try and stretch about 2 hours, but I guess once you start talking. Start talking snakes. It's easy to kill time. I've had
absolutely
all the time.
Quick.
You can, yeah, you don't have a quick conversation about snakes, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. So awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on, and you know, you're welcome back anytime. And you know, when you got your other breeding projects on the ground, give us a holler, and we'll talk again.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks very much for having us on, and good luck with you guys with your breeding seasons.
Thank you.
Good luck with your IJs, Eric. Big nice to see what comes out of that clutch, eh?
He needs no luck with the IJs.
Yeah.
He gets them. I need the luck with the IJs. I don't get mine to breed. So, no. He needs luck with, like, his coastals or something. I don't know. What do you have problems with? No.
Nothing.
You still haven't cracked them, Eric? Owen?
No. No, it pissed me off. She breeds, but she is, so far nothing happening. So I'll get it.
Yeah, well.
Yeah. They're the easiest carpet to breed, too, by the way.
Shut up. No, they're not. They're difficult. Heard it from numerous people that they're the hardest animal to ever breed to anything.
Oh, yeah.
That's not true. But
so. All right. All right, man. Well, thanks. Like I said, thanks again, and look forward to see what you got going on.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks again, and great to chat, guys.
Yep, absolutely.
Cool. Thank you.
All right.
Cheers.
Yep. Yeah, awesome. Awesome stuff. So let's see. I guess we'll run down the list real quick, and we'll get off and call it a night.
Sweet.
Let's see, what do we got? First, let's check in and see where we're at shirt-wise. 67 shirts, Owen. $650.
Holy crap!
Oh my God! Hold on. I'm gonna go buy a shirt here.
Buy another one.
Yeah, I'm gonna buy another one because I want to. I want to get this up.
Just a little bit more. You're going to buy like 10 shirts. Yeah, 67. We have $650 raised with 2 hours left. Soon to be 1 hour left. Once we hit 11 o'clock, we have 1 hour.
Yes. So go ahead. Let me just...
I'll wait.
You
no,
think
we're waiting.
Or something
no,
like
I
that.
I can't. No. This is... That's the problem with you and I. I talk when you don't want me to, and then when you really need me to, I'm quiet.
Anyways,
hopefully we can get a little bit higher because with the purchase of a few more shirts, because we are at $650, we were $50 away from $700 to give to US ARC, which I know it's like probably a drop in the bucket of what they may need, but that's still $700 they didn't have before we did this, so it's very cool to even think about that as I'm having it. What I love is that we have so many contributors from overseas. I think we have about 5 or 6 shirts that I have to send to the UK as well as Australia. And that's people who are contributing money to a fundraiser to help an organization that is only protecting the laws for reptiles in the United States. Has nothing to do with them. Nothing at all. So it's just to have that kind of generosity from those people is amazing to me. So it's definitely very cool. Derek is reading his credit card. If you listen quietly, you'll hear the numbers. And then we're all going to get albinos. Eric, go ahead. What's the security code on the back of the credit card? Oh, see, he muted me. He muted himself so he can't hear it. Otherwise, we all would be getting Eric's credit card numbers right now. Hey, yeah. Eric Burke bought a shirt.
Yes.
Good 68. Job, buddy.
Okay. $660.
So, I was telling everybody that they listened. I told them if we were listening quietly, we could hear your credit card numbers. So.
Oh, I'm not that foolish, Owen. I'm not that
foolish.
Oh,
no.
I know, like, you hey, would decipher it.
I'd be like, hey, dude, look, I got albinos. Weird, because my credit card got stolen. It's the same amount. Oh, funny. That's interesting.
I got rough scales, bolens, and albinos. How do you like that? Yeah.
Then I'd sell you the bolens just to really kind of twist that knife.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cruel.
That's horrible.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
So let's see if we can get up there and help US ARC. And like I said earlier, check out usarc.org for updates on state to state, as well as the they're fighting the Lacey Act ruling and trying to overturn that. So any support that you can give will be great. So be sure to go over there and check it out. And then we got MorelliaPythons.com. Again, like I said, let's try to boost the traffic and get it back to where it used to be back in the days. I love that forum, and I want to call it home. And like I said, you're seeing a little bit more traffic over there than normal. I know a while back there was nothing going on. But hopefully we can get it back to where it was. Don't forget Carpet Fest. We got the two dates. Northeast is on 5/17. Redding Reptile Breeders is the guy, Mr. Howard Redding himself. He's hosting us for the third year in a row. So big shout out to Howard and a thanks. We're gonna really start pushing that and really try to. Me and you have to get together, Owen, and figure out.
I'll probably make the announcement soon because I'll volunteer to be in charge of food again. What I'd like to do is do the food again. And then, of course, we have the new rules set up of that if you volunteer to bring the food, you're responsible for bringing it as well as preparing it for consumption. So, do not say that you're going to bring hamburgers and then bring 20 pounds of raw meat unless you want to cook it. So, that's just where we're going. If you say you're going to bring hamburgers and you want to... And you want to swing by McDonald's and spend $50 on those $1 cheeseburgers? Hey, I'll freaking allow it. Fine, whatever. But gotta get it done. So it's it'll be fun. It'll be great. If you are new and you want to come and introduce yourself to me and you want me to remember your name, I suggest doing it before the auction, because if we go by last year, I won't remember shit, so it'll be a fun time. There have been threats that my father might show up just to, because now he knows where it is, apparently, and I couldn't keep that a secret from him, so hopefully he does not show. But if you're listening to this, old man, you better not. So, it'll be a fun time.
Yeah, absolutely. And then Don't forget the if you're out on the West Coast, Heather is from Mystic Exotics. She's hosting the Northwest Carpet Fest, and if you want to get in touch with her, her email is mysticexotics@gmail.com. Give us a couple days, and carpetfest.org will be up and running. If you want to just check in there and for details and more information. MariaPythonRadio.com. If you don't catch us live, you can download us on iTunes for free. You can also check out our website and everything that we have going over there. It's cool stuff. If you want to email us, you have any questions, comments, anything that you would maybe like to hear on the show, by all means, you can contact us at info@MoreliaPythonRadio.com. Next week, we have Eric Hernandez. We're going to be talking carpets and West Indian boas. Should be cool. A little touch on a little bit with that.
Okay.
He has some awesome coastal projects going on. And again, he's a guy kind of, he doesn't have a huge collection or anything, but he sure does make some nice snakes, and he's a really nice guy. So it would be cool to talk coastal carpets, and he has a lot of the red stuff and the Madam Blueberry stuff that's going on over in his collection. So looking forward to chatting that up. And then I guess for me, I just have ebmorelia.com waiting for our first clutch. And, you know, unfortunately, I don't know if I'm going to let anything go from that clutch, but...
Do you ever?
Well, I don't know, Owen. I guess it depends on, you know, I mean, oh, man, I don't know. It's
yeah,
melanistic
yeah, okay.
hijack.
Yeah, nothing,
thing,
no,
you know
nothing's
I mean?
Coming out. Yeah, nothing's coming out. It's okay.
Yeah. But for information on what we have going on, you can check out ebmorelia.com. And if you want to email me personally, it's at eric@ebmorelia.com. That's all I got, Owen. It's all you.
All right. Okay, what we got is Rogue has no upcoming shows. We're not doing anything recently. We're just kind of hanging. So without that, what we say is that there are eggs on the ground, and the lists are forming for clutches for Rogue Reptiles. If you want to get a baby python from a certain type, it is definitely beneficial to you to call us, put your name down the list. It doesn't matter if you're the only person on that list, guarantee your spot. Several lists that are filled up or filling up are Maclots, white-lipped python faces, as well as a few other morph carpet pythons. So definitely call, put your name down so you can guarantee yourself at least a shot at something you might want.
You're going to have to fight me for the Maclots first, though, you know.
Dude, that list blew up over the past week. I don't know what the hell somebody said something about Max. Anyway.
Good Lord, I'm going to be at the top of that list.
You are at the top of the list. Shut up.
Okay.
So anyway, definitely go to rogue-reptiles.com. We're in the process of updating the website, all new pictures, bios for all the animals, as well as other products. And updated animals for sale. So keep an eye on that. Also, go and like us at RogueReptiles@Facebook.com. All the latest happenings at Rogue. You can also have the gallery, which is the sole baby gallery. If you have purchased an animal from Rogue, we love to see baby pictures. We love to see updated pictures. Eric just sent me one, and I'm freaking ecstatic about it. So send it to us. Give us the name, who the parents were, what year it was. We love that stuff. We'll throw it on the webpage. You can get a whole nice little tag for it.
I need a name for that. I need a name for that. For
name
that
it, damn it. So,
I'm not good at naming animals.
I'll name it, and then you got to stick with it. And it's Owen is awesome, and that's his name. Yeah, okay. So,
O-I-A. O-I-A.
Yep, O-I-A. Done. It's done. I'm going to type it up right now. It's over. Anyway, what I will say now is thank you for listening, and we will catch you all next week for some more Morelia Python Radio. Good night. And the